Well, here we are, Porky.
We are.
We're in a brand new year.
We certainly are.
And we've been in it for a while, to be
we
fair.
Have, yeah, we have.
But nevertheless, it still feels kind of new, doesn't it?
Well, it's the first week of the new year.
Yeah,
put it that
feels
way,
kind
okay?
of new. Yeah. 2019. Yeah. I can't get my head around the number somehow.
Why not?
2019, it sounds like a weird number.
No, it's like 1919.
No, 1919 and 2020. Yeah, yeah, but 2019.
In the year 2525.
How old will you be then?
Well, a lot older than I am now. Not admitting to any age, of course, even though I did celebrate a birthday just before. Before Christmas.
You did indeed.
As everybody knows, I want to thank you, everybody, for getting in touch.
64,
that was very good of you.
Wasn't it?
Hey?
64.
Well, we don't go into that. I did sing a little anthem, but I mean, that was only relevant to the birthday, not to the age itself, you know?
Okay.
Right, now then, I'll tell you what I want to talk to you about.
What do
you
want
to talk
to
you about Porky Vision.
Yes.
Because there's been some great stuff over Christmas.
Well,
right?
Over Christmas and New Year, yes, there's been a lot of television to
there's
watch.
There's been two outstanding programmes, right, which I have been grooving into.
Oh, yeah.
And the first one, of course, is Hugo Victor's Les Miserables.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't like the look of that, to be honest.
I tell you what, you are going to like the look of it, and I've given you my review, because my review is absolutely painstakingly brilliant,
is
okay?
It? Okay.
Now, what happens is, right, normally when I go see Mr. Brazil, his place in Suffolk, you know, where he has his barn, converted barn, very
near
nice
where
place.
You keep your dirigible boat.
No, that's about 8 miles away on a place called Orwell Quay.
Have you checked that it's still there,
on the marina?
Way?
Yeah, of course I have.
You know, it's been hijacked by the people smugglers, and they're using it to go backwards
well,
and forwards
funny
to,
you should say that.
To Calais.
Funny you should say that. That would be a very able boat to do, but I think it'd be more likely they'd come across the North Sea from Rotterdam.
I see.
Because, you know, Ipswich is in that
it's
sort
a bit of a longer crossing, isn't
it? Yeah, much longer cross to get down to the channel. They'd definitely come across the North Sea. The North Sea is one of the most dangerous stretches of water.
You want to lock your dirigible up, though, because you don't want it being used for nefarious purposes by these scumbags.
You don't have to lock it up, man. It sits on a deck. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you go to these boat yards and there's all these frames, all these boats. And they get a giant version of a forklift pickup truck, right?
Yeah.
And they lift it up to the sixth level and slot it into your...
Don't you have to pay to have it stored there?
Of course you do, yeah.
How much does that cost you?
Oh, it costs quite a lot. I think it's about a couple hundred a month, something like that. Yeah.
So a couple hundred a month.
You
pay that just to keep a boat that you never use.
Well, you know,
I mean for God's sake.
Other people can use it, you know, if I give them permission.
Okay,
right.
But well, anyway, in the summer we should go up there and go out on it.
Good idea.
We could record a podcast on the high seas.
Good idea.
Why don't you do that?
That's a great idea. Eh? We should do that.
I think we should.
Now then, what I was going to tell you about is, so, anyway, the point of talking about Mr. Brazil is that he absolutely loves the musical Les Miserables, right?
Yeah.
So I go there one night, you know, a few sherbets and all that, and had dinner and all that, and it's great. We came back, and he said, oh, Burke, I'll put the Les Mis on, it's great.
Right.
It's a bloody marvellous, you know.
Right.
And I found it intensely boring, because it's a musical.
Stuff. Yeah, it's awful.
And it's all been sung in French.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not surprising, because it's all about, like, the French Revolution and all that kind of stuff,
peasants.
You know. The peasants and all that.
Peasants are revolting.
So, yeah. So, anyway, more than once.
It's hard to imagine Mr. Brazil, as you call him, being into musicals, really. I just can't see it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I was big into the theatre. In fact, he bored me to death recently during a show we were doing by telling me what a great film A Star Is Born is.
Oh, really?
And, I mean, to me, that's some sort of mushy love story, which was made years ago. Well, no, it was made years ago by Barbara Streisand and Chris Christopherson, wasn't it?
Right. It was.
And I thought it was crap then. Yeah. Apparently, he says it's one of the best films he's ever seen. And, funnily enough, Brian Viner, our male critic friend, you know, our TV critic friend from the Mail, agreed. But anyway, more than once, I've fallen asleep watching this bloody rubbish, Les Miserables.
Yeah.
So when
they do the 12 bottles of Pinot Grigio,
they could have something to do with that. Yeah. But remember, Blado y Modo.
Of course.
So anyway, what happens is, I keep slapping my thigh like that.
Yeah, why
because,
do you keep slapping your
Well, because that's the
that's
way
That's going to sound really bad on the podcast.
No, that's the way the
it'll
French
make,
peasants
it'll make people
express
jar
themselves.
As they're driving.
But anyway, so what happens is, I saw it at Covent Television. I thought, well, I'll give it a go. So I recorded it, you know, smarter than the average bear, which meant that I could, at my own leisure, just watch the first 10 minutes and see what it's all about.
And it's a series, is it? Or is it
It's a six-part series, every Sunday night, for 6 weeks, right? I've seen the first now.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I found it captivating from minute one.
But it's a musical.
It's not musical. This is the whole point.
Oh, okay.
Victor Hugo's original book was not a musical.
Right.
But then,
well, of course it wasn't. It's a book.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, it wasn't a musical book, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean?
Seen a musical book.
No.
Part of those ones you used to get as a kid.
Yeah.
Well, you open them up, they play music.
Yeah, but Mary Poppins originally wasn't a musical. Mary Poppins was a book.
Yeah, I know.
Written by
all books are not musicals.
Mary Poppins was written by the woman who was the authoress of Mary Poppins, right, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Of course, yeah.
But she was courted by Walt Disney for 20 years, who said, I want to turn your book into a film.
Was this in between his dressing up as a Nazi?
Could have been. And well, it was between inventing Mickey Mouse,
yes.
Donald Duck, and all that.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Yeah. And she always said, no, I don't want my book made into a funny film, you know. Anyway, eventually, he got her over to Hollywood, and he convinced her it was great, but she would only do it if it included lots of music, so that's why I turned it into a musical.
Okay.
Mind you, lots of Disney films are musicals.
Well, most of them are, really, aren't they? I mean, it wasn't until much later on.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you remember, one of the films I remember first seeing, being very impressed with as a child, was Fantasia.
Fantasia.
Which was basically a whole series of kind of cartoons put to music.
Right.
The music had been written already, you know, like The Sorcerer's Apprentice and all
that. Oh, I see,
And they decided, and they did this amazing sort of animated film to go with the music. Yeah. And I remember sitting in a cinema being completely
captivated.
You know, just captivated by it, yeah.
Do you know one of the first films I ever saw with my mum as a kid?
Yeah.
I remember it was Born Free.
Oh, Born Free, I remember that, yeah.
As free as a
It wasn't Free as a Bird,
mountain.
That was the one about the lions,
that's
right?
That's right, Elsa the lion.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
The lioness.
Yeah, yeah.
And they rescued her as a cub after the evil poachers had killed her parents, and then they sort of brought her up to the age of about two. And then they realised they had to release her back into the wild.
Yeah.
And it's one of those classic moments. Years later, they went back, and as Elsa leapt towards them, they had no idea whether Elsa was going to fucking eat them
it was a family show, though, so she didn't eat anybody.
That's right,
But I mean, one of the things about movies as well in those days, because I remember very distinctly living in London, it was a huge treat.
Yes.
And my dad would take us, maybe on a Saturday afternoon.
To Hampstead?
No, into Leicester Square.
Oh, Leicester
And you go to, like, the Empire Leicester Square, where the seats were very, very comfortable.
Yes.
And where it cost a little bit more money,
yeah,
and you have the sense that you were doing something show business,
right?
You know,
yeah, sure.
You were going, instead of going to local cinema,
that's right,
which was a bit manky.
Yeah,
you were going to this beautiful sort of palace of film. And I remember we saw The Sting there when The Sting came out.
Right, okay. Well, I remember the Chester Odeon being a bit like that. You know, going to the centre of Chester.
The same ring.
The same ring as Leicester Square. The one film I remember, which really upset me as a kid, I must have been very young.
Yeah.
Was Dumbo.
Oh, really?
Because the plight of Dumbo the flying elephant, used to fly because he had big flappy ears.
That's right. Yeah.
And he crashed. And I remember getting really upset.
Yeah, well,
you know?
I was in terrible floods of tears over Animal Farm.
Really?
I still haven't seen it since. But
Animal Farm was a political film.
They made a cartoon version.
Oh, no, they did,
right?
Yeah.
But when they took old Dobbin off, whatever his name was, the horse. Off to the glue factory.
That's right, to the glue
factory.
I was
inconsolable.
It was terrible.
And that was awful.
The evil pig was called Napoleon.
Napoleon,
the evil pig.
Some pigs are more equal than others.
That's right. All pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than others. And that was written by George Orwell, of course, to try and expose the vagaries, the cynicism, and the sheer goddamn criminality of communism.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, indeed.
That was his words, anyway.
I see that Jeremy Corbyn's now favourite to become the next Prime Minister of this country.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I saw an opinion poll out today which said that Conservatives are still ahead or something.
Well, I think they might be, but he's still got... Just remember what we were saying, the next Prime Minister. So it's a bit like saying, who's the next manager of Man United going to be?
Right, I see,
is one.
Well, who's the next manager of Everton going to be? We could ask, perhaps. You
could ask
we
that.
We ask about that.
No, that's been,
getting back to
a pretty poor holiday season for you, hasn't it, Everton-wise?
It's not been good. Mm. So anyway, so...
So back to Les Mis, anyway.
Les Mis. So anyway, it opens up, and the plot is basically...
Yeah.
It's 1829 in France, right?
Yeah.
When was the revolution? That was earlier.
It was, I think, earlier, yeah.
It was. It was because it was Napoleon came to power in the wake of the revolution.
Bastille Day is celebrated, I think, in July, isn't it?
Yes, in July.
So it was July. But is it not July?
We finally got rid of Napoleon, right?
Yeah.
The French Revolution was 1798.
Yes.
I know that now because I tell you why. Because Napoleon came back to power in the wake of the revolution, supported by the hair shirts, you know, like the peasants.
Just before he was exiled into Elba.
This is before the Battle of Waterloo, which finally saw him off.
Yeah.
Now, hang on. The Battle of Waterloo, in fact, was 1815. So the French Revolution was probably about 1811 or something like that. See what I mean?
It was 1798.
1798, I think it first started, but it went on for a while.
Went on for a while,
yeah. So anyway, in the wake of this, people were treated appalling. They're all starving.
Right. So this is before the French Revolution, Les Mis, right?
No, it's after.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Oh,
okay. So what happens is...
You don't really know, do you?
Yeah, I do, but it's irrelevant anyway. It's irrelevant because what happens is, this big guy, it opens up with him in appalling conditions. Yeah,
right.
In appalling conditions. He's a prisoner, but he's kept on a hulk, right?
And a
hulks,
hulk.
Yeah, hulks are.
What, you mean like an old ship?
That's right,
old
ships which are moored on the River Seine,
yes.
You know, in Paris.
Of course.
And
you were in the left bank.
In the left bank. But, and they're kept in chains.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, like I just told you about the way I store my dinghy in compartments.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the prisoners are put in the compartments like that on the hulk, you know, chained up all the time.
Yeah.
chained up to the hulk or chained up to each other,
yeah.
and they go out as work gangs, right?
Okay.
And that's and so he got 19 years hard labour. Do you know what he got it for?
What?
Stealing a fucking loaf. No, I joke not.
Well, I mean,
he stole one loaf, yeah. right, and he got 19 years for it.
It's a bit harsh, that, isn't it?
It's a bit harsh. I thought it was very harsh.
I mean, you know the phrase hung for a sheep as well as a lamb.
That's right, yeah.
You may as well have taken something a bit more fucking worse.
Well, what happened was, you know, in the wake of the revolution, all the peasants fucked everything up, so the economy collapsed.
Was it
right?
a French loaf, by any chance?
It was a French loaf, yeah. So he meets his sister one night, and she says, oh, Gerard. I don't think his name is Gerard, but I'll call him Gerard. Yeah. And he says,
this is Gerard Depardieu taking a piss in the middle of the aisle of the
aeroplane. Yeah, that's right, yeah. and he says, how are you, sir? Because sir means sister in French.
Does it, yeah. Okay.
How are you, sir? Okay. Not sir.
Not sir, yeah.
S-O-U-E-R, you know, sir. How are you, sir?
Yeah.
And she says, I am...
Is it C-O-U-E-R?
What?
Is it C-O-U-E-R?
No, it begins with S. S for sister, sure? yeah. Yeah, yeah, sir. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
S-O-E-U-R, yeah, sir. And she says, oh, I'm very worried, Gerard. And he says, why? He says, because my children will fucking starve to death tonight unless they have bread.
It's a fucking comedy, this, is it?
No. Unless they have bread.
Right.
So he says, oh, leave it to me.
Yeah. So, I believe
so he goes off and he nicks this loaf from the bakery, right? and he comes back. And he says, "There, feed the children." Anyway, the baker's not...
How do you
not...
know about all this? Is this a part of a flashback or something?
No, I read the book.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. But it didn't start there. I'll show you started. Right. So, anyway, the baker got upset and sent his own people out to find it who nicked his loaf.
Right.
I mean, what a twat the baker must have been.
Petty,
one loaf,
he?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they got this guy and they said, you know, there is no excuse for criminality in the new republic.
Uh-huh.
In the Fifth Republic, we will not tolerate it. You will be sent to jail to serve your punishment.
Zut
alors. Yeah, and then suddenly give him 19 years.
Yeah.
I mean, Christ, you know.
No wonder it was a revolution.
That's right. Anyway, so the pictures of him...
What do you get for stealing a Danish pastry?
Well, God knows.
Yeah. Custard tart.
Well, I mean, in this country...
Or
for
a
the
pear
same,
flan, even.
For the, yeah, for the same sort of crime, like nicking a sheep, you could easily get 14 years
well,
transportation.
Well, people got sent to Australia for less, didn't they?
They used to send transportation convicts in batches of 7 years. So minimum, you got away with was 7 years.
Mm.
14 if you were, you know, sort of middling crime.
Yes.
Bad crime, 21 years.
Yeah.
And that was your lot, you know. Mm. God knows why everybody ever came back. But anyway, so he gets dragged off, beaten up, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Dragged into jail, 19 years.
Stuck in the Hulk.
Now, unbelievably, the opening scenes are all about him being released.
All right.
I mean, you know, after 19 years living under a hulk with rats running over you every night.
You'd have typhoid or something, wouldn't
you? You would, and hard labour every day. You never got a day off in 19 years.
No.
You're dragged out of your, you know, your cage
you have to
every
work
morning.
Bank holidays and everything.
But bank holidays and everything, you know, with a pickaxe, smashing up rocks to build roads in France for l'empereur, you know.
I thought the Romans built all the roads in France.
There's nothing
like driving on those amazing roads in France with the trees, you know, you're just going to bloody go
right.
straight line for hundreds of miles.
Yeah, yeah, no,
fantastic.
It's good.
Love it.
But anyway,
is this guy sort of the hero of the show then?
Well,
is he the main character?
Well, it's a bit more complicated than that. So anyway, so there's a scene where he's called into the governor's office. Yeah. That you have paid your price to the Republic, and now we are releasing you.
That's like hello.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So he takes his red shirt off. Which
hey,
apparently,
by the way, did you see what happened the other day? Do you remember talking about your card from Vicky Michelle?
Yes, that's right.
I had her on the show the other
day. That's right.
She rang in to talk about old June Whitfield.
Oh, blimey.
Vicky Michelle.
Fantastic.
How amazing.
Oh, did you mention her?
I didn't get a chance. Because you know, I didn't want to ruin the interview.
She was done,
I should have done.
Yeah, but anyway, so what happens then is he takes off the red top that he's worn for 19 years. I haven't had a bath in 19 years, by the way. This guy,
a red top.
Yeah, yeah, you know, to like a criminal's guard.
Oh,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. Well, like the orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, that's
probably.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. And then we notice that the jailer is, you know, his eyes are fixed on his tackle, so to speak.
On his tackle?
Yeah, on his, you know, on his sexual organs, you know. And yeah, yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, as he's leaving?
Do you think
if he wanted something to do with it,
well,
he would have looked at him earlier?
During the 19 years
incarceration?
So anyway, then they have this amazing conversation in which he says...
Comment allez-vous?
In which old Gerard says, where are my 189 francs, you see. And they're all fucking corrupt, the jailers.
Course,
and they say, you're not getting 189 francs. We have 103 for you, 132 for you.
Right.
He said, you have stolen my francs. I want them. He says, you're not fucking getting them. No, fuck
Hang
off.
Hang on, if he had 189 francs, why did he steal the fucking bread?
Well, no, this was his pay.
Oh, I see.
Well, as a prisoner.
Oh, I see. He actually earned money. Didn't
oh, yeah, you get like 3 francs a year or something, or 5 right. francs a year or something like that, you know. And, you know, like prisoners do in this country, I suppose. But, I mean, how that could happen in such an uncivilised environment, I've no idea. Right. So he then leaves and he starts wandering around, because obviously he's got nowhere to go. But he has to carry a passport around then, because he is criminal.
Okay.
You know,
right.
And that's so.
It'd be easy just to brand him, wouldn't it, with one of those?
Well,
know,
it would
like
be.
Branding.
I thought, yeah. But anyway, so every town he goes to, and in those days, all French towns had like an entrance gate. You know what I mean?
Right.
Every time he went through, where are your papers? Who are you? You filthy villain! You know, and all this. So he has to produce his passport.
What about to the guy that was staring at his tackle?
Well, no, he was like a prison official.
Right.
He stormed the Hulk.
But we don't know why he's doing that, though.
Well, he's
so
giving him the eye.
So why did you throw that in?
He's giving him the eye. Well, because it's part of the plot.
Oh, I see.
Part of the plot, which will emerge later.
Was he a bit of a homosexualist?
Well, he could have been. Could have been.
Okay.
But anyway, so anyway, so this guy, you know...
You've seen the time, by the way.
Yeah, well, don't worry about time. Everywhere he goes, he's shunned, you know, because he's criminal.
Of course,
you know. But, I mean, lots of people must have been criminal in France, because they're all starving.
Yeah,
so lots of must have stolen loads. Maybe he was just too thick and got caught and everybody else didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, he kips down on a bench in the middle of this town that he's been to. Everybody has shunned him because you are criminal, you know.
Yeah.
And this old woman comes along and she says, wait, are you sleeping on the bench?
Yeah.
And he said, because I have nowhere else. And she said, go and knock on that door. You know, she points to a door with a light.
Porte.
Hey?
La porte.
Yeah, la porte, yeah. So he says, why? He will help you. So he goes across, and it's some sort of vicar or something, you know, like a...
Do-gooder.
Yeah, do-gooder, yeah, like a churchman or something like that. So, you know, the churchman is played by Derek Jacobi.
Oh, yeah.
Who was very good
I didn't know he was still alive.
I didn't either. I didn't know he was still alive.
He was in I, Claudius, was he?
He was in I, Claudius, but he was also in that one where the monk went and investigated all the murders.
Cadfael.
That was good.
I used to like that show.
I like that.
You know, it's one of those shows you never see anymore.
No, I
am. You know, for, considering the fact we can now watch Department S, bloody Columbo up the wazoo, the 80, why can't you see Cadfael?
I'd love to see Cadfael again, because I thought he was great in that.
Yeah, he was good.
So, I like historical things. So, anyway... He goes to see the vicar.
Yeah.
And the vicar, oh, my son, yes, of course I will help you and we'll give you a bed for the night. Anyway, in the middle of the night, old Gerard, having just been released from doing 19 years and stealing a loaf of bread, goes downstairs, opens the cutlery drawer and nicks all the fucking silver.
And the family silver disappears. Yeah. Cheers, Gerard.
So he makes off. Anyway... The cops, of course, are alert to a criminal.
Right.
And they get him. And they nab him. They bring
him
back.
He's a fucking hopeless criminal, I suppose, isn't
he? Really hopeless criminal.
19 years.
Anyway, he comes in. And for some unknown reason, Derek Jacobi says, no, he did not steal the silver. He was taking it to be cleaned for me, weren't you?
Yes.
And Gerard goes, oh, yes, that's right, yes. Right, okay, thank you. And so takes the cops to fuck off, you know.
Right.
And sorry, I'm using too much language here, but that's the only non-French word, you know. Anyway, he says, why did you help me? He says, because I'm a man of God, and no, you must help yourself, you know. And put my silver back, you know, and you can get lost now, because I've tried to help you and all that. And so the last scene is of him wandering off into the, like, distance and keeping down for the night in a field.
Yeah.
But what we do know is, because I've studied the plot, is that the cop who originally arrested him...
Well, for the loaf incident.
For the loaf incident, believes he should never have been released, right? And is determined.
He thinks he's a bit of a career criminal.
A career criminal, doesn't want him back on the streets of France. Bit like a sort of modern day Kojak, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's determined.
Is he bald?
No, he's not actually. No.
So he's not like Kojak then.
No. And he's determined to get him back in jail. So he goes out to find him and brand him a criminal again.
Right.
So it's quite exciting because of the brutality so far. One of the guys
isn't
in the chain
meant to be something to do with the peasants' revolt, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
well,
it was.
What's it got to do with fucking
stealing
stuff?
We'll get to that in the next episode or two.
Right.
But in the chain gang, and they're all chained to each other and treated brutally, whipped every day and all that. The bloke in front suddenly lashes out at one of the guards. You stop whipping me, you know. You bastard. So they pull him out the chain gang, put him up against the wall, punch all his face in a few times, right? And then bring out the firing squad and they say, right, shoot him.
I mean, we shouldn't be laughing, really. I suppose it's a pretty ghastly time to be alive.
Yeah.
But what's the point of beating him up if you're going to shoot him anyway?
Well, I just knocked his teeth out first, you know.
Unbelievable.
Mm.
So is that Les Mis in a nutshell, then? Is that it?
Yeah, that's Les Mis, yeah. Anyway, move on to the next great...
Yeah, I might have a look at it, but it doesn't really appeal to me, I have to say. I mean, it's all a bit kind of worthy, isn't it?
No, it's good. It's good entertainment.
Is it good?
Now, the next programme, which is utterly brilliant, is The Return of Luther.
Luther, yes. I've seen a lot of writing about this. A lot of women, in particular, very excited because, of course, Idris Elba is a massive heartthrob.
That's
even
right.
Even though he's announced that he's getting married.
Oh, is he?
He's a very clever guy, Idris Elba, because he had a movie out in the summer.
Yes, yes.
And he went to the... I can't remember what it's called, but I think it's a... I think it's about sort of drug gangs or something like that.
Yeah,
and and he plays this kind of drug kingpin, I think. But he goes to the premiere of the movie, which is a fairly run-of-the-mill film that nobody's really going to cover very much.
Yeah.
As he's walking in on the red carpet, he gets down on one knee and proposes to his girlfriend.
Was that what he did?
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing
thereby guaranteeing not only front-page coverage of the film and the premiere, but, you know, massive coverage of the whole event. And the film became a great success as a result.
And putting him back in the frame as the next James Bond.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that is oscillating between him, the guy who's in Bodyguard.
Yes.
Did you see,
I wouldn't fancy him as James Bond. He looks a bit of a sort of
bit of a
plank.
Wimp.
Well, he just looks a bit of a plank, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yes,
I mean,
Mom.
I quite like the idea of Idris Elba as Bond.
No, Mom. Yeah, I quite like Idris Elba. I think he's got fantastic personality and character.
Well, you know, the first thing I saw him in was The Wire, right, which is an American TV show shot in Baltimore.
Baltimore,
in
yeah.
some really horrible, shitty parts of Baltimore. And he was in it as a cop.
But he's an English actor, isn't he?
Sorry, not as a cop. He's in it as a bad guy.
That's right.
But he had this American accent. I didn't even know he was English.
Really?
When I started watching The Wire.
So I wonder how he got that part, then. He must be very talented.
Well, there was another English guy in it as well. Dominic West, who's also English. Yeah. He was also in it.
Oh, well, funny enough, Dominic West is...
Uh-huh.
The guy I've just been talking about.
Oh, yeah.
In
Les Mis.
In Les Miserables.
Oh, that's Dominic
West.
He's
the criminal. Yeah, he's
there
criminal.
You go. Well, he's a great actor.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he's
another
one.
Yeah.
He played this very troubled kind of Irish-American drunken police officer.
Right,
who basically got drunk all the time and shagged loads of people that he shouldn't have shagged.
Really,
I mean, I've got The Wire.
Yeah.
I've got the box set. You want to borrow it? It's very good.
Well, it'll be available on Netflix or something,
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic show. But I had no idea who Idris Elba was.
No.
And I just assumed he was American.
Yeah.
Because that's how good his accent was.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. So anyway, he comes back as Luther.
So is this like series three?
I think it is series
three. Because I discovered Luther when I got, I think, Netflix for the first time.
Yeah, well, it must be on
Netflix. And they had the first two series, and I started watching it, and everybody raved about it. I'd never seen it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. So let me tell you, so the opening is just so dynamic, you know. So Luther lives in somewhere like Hackney,
but
not a better end of Hackney.
No, it's
the worst
pretty
end.
Shitty part,
and he's just got one of these flats where the door opens down here and you go up a set of stairs and then, you know, you've got a one-bedroom flat at the top, you know what I mean? Yeah. Sort of thing you'd see in Coronation Street,
We've
so to speak.
All been in those places,
we have, yeah.
In
we
our
have,
youth.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to live in one of those.
Or being invited back by somebody who lived in one.
Exactly. Well, I used to live in one of those when I was in Newcastle as a young reporter.
Yes.
Of course, I don't live in anything like that now.
Where do you live now?
I live in much better properties.
How many homes have you got now?
Well, it doesn't matter, does it? I mean, you know, I mean, you have an investment portfolio, and we're not going into that again. I want to tell you about Luther.
Do you know what? I've got a tip for you, though, because I got this from somebody the other day.
Yes.
You could be making a lot of money by renting out your property to the homeless.
Yes.
Because you basically rent it to the local council.
Yeah.
Right? You charge them anything you like.
Yes.
And they'll pay it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't rent my properties to the homeless.
Why not? Well, you'd be helping them out.
No, I wouldn't. I'm sorry.
No.
I have...
You could help them out. These people need homes.
Well, if they need homes, I'll try and join a homeless charity and try and help them. But I think the danger of putting homeless people into private properties is that you take a position where the risk factor could be
these are just
extenuated.
People that need... accommodation.
I want to help people. I want to help homeless people. Well, I've told you before, I give homeless people food and drink all
the
time.
Yeah, but they need somewhere to live. If
yes,
you've
I
got
know.
Empty property...
I know.
No, I'm appealing to you because you can make money. Do you know how much local councils are paying out £1 billion a year
now
to people like you?
But you see, you've hit the nail on the head there. Yeah. What I really meant to say from the start, I didn't want to boast about it, is I have no... ambition whatsoever to make a profit out of people who are homeless.
Is that right?
People who are homeless and down and out. I don't want to make money on the back of their misery, all right?
Is that true?
No, that's absolutely true.
Then.
Absolutely true.
You'd rather have an empty property that you can't rent out
to
anyone.
I don't have empty properties. Don't worry about that. That's not a problem. But it doesn't matter, does it?
All right, okay.
This time of year is very tense anyway because in certain parts of the property world, you've got to enlist students for next September. That's how far in advance.
You've when you say a list, what do you mean?
Well, you've got to, because it's now the new year.
Yeah.
Students have filled in those UCA forms about where they want to go, university and all that. Yeah. And you've got to now get into the system to make sure you fill all your student lettings right for September.
When you say get into the system, you mean hack into it?
No, not hack into it, but you know, contact the universities, contact the student organisations, perhaps contact developers who are themselves building student accommodation.
So you don't mind making money out of students?
Well, students are usually funded by either loans or their parents. Mm. The homeless, you can't take money off them. They haven't got
money. No,
and I would not take advantage of homeless people.
It's not their money. It's coming from the council.
Well, you know, whatever they've got in their pocket, I'm not going to take it off them. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
So anyway, so Luther.
Yeah.
So what happens is he's on his way home when all of a sudden a van pulls up, right?
Right.
And all these guys jump out. I mean, armed to the teeth, but not with guns that you can see.
Bats,
they're baseball bats and tasers.
Oh.
And they put a white hood over his head and they taser him.
Right.
You know, slam on the bonnet of somebody else's car.
That must be
tasered.
Horrible.
Absolutely horrible.
Have you seen those videos of people that try and taser themselves? To see, do you remember when you did the Cinnamon Challenge?
Yes.
And people tried, there was a craze for a while of people trying to taser themselves.
They're mad.
To see if they could survive it.
They're mad.
You could die.
There was one guy who was the chief constable of Greater Manchester, and he got one of his officers to taser him to show people that whilst it was effective, it wasn't deadly.
It wasn't dangerous,
And a year later, he committed suicide on Snowden.
Yeah, blimey.
On Snowden.
What, because of the effect it had on him?
Well, nobody knows if it was the effect it had on him or whatever, but he had a complicated personal life. You know, there was a wife and there was another woman involved.
A lot of
these
chief constables lead very interesting lives.
Absolutely. Mm. And it was Greater Manchester. But he used to holiday in the in Snowdonia, walking and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And he drove over there one time and things had got on top of him, took a bottle of vodka up to the the summit and drank himself.
Blimey.
And died of exposure.
Horrible. Yes.
So what you do is you go up there when it's very, very cold.
Give instructions on how to kill themselves.
No. But I mean, what I'm saying is you go up there in a flimsy coat.
Flimsy.
And it gets colder and colder. And then at the top, and what you do is, you see, you drink the vodka because in drinking the vodka, it raises your body temperature, but it's a false raising your body temperature.
Right.
It's actually much, much
makes
colder
you feel warmer
than you think. That's right.
Yeah.
Now you get to the top, and then what you do is you finish the bottle of vodka off.
Yeah.
Go into like a coma through alcohol,
and then you just die,
and you never wake up.
Yeah.
Never wake up, you see.
Shocking.
But anyway, so then they drag him into this van.
Right. Is this at the very start?
The very start. Right. I mean, it's really brutal, you know.
It's very violent. I mean, I remember thinking when I first watched it.
Yeah.
It's very violent.
Drag him into this van, and then they take him to what I can only describe as a sort of nightclub or sort of variety theatre or something like that. More like a theatre than a nightclub, but I think it's a theatre that's been converted into a nightclub.
I see.
What I mean?
Right.
You know, the sort of, you know, the stalls. The rows of seats have been replaced by like gambling tables and all that kind of stuff, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
So this is clearly a gangland villain who's got him. They take the hat off and then the gangland villain, who's got a wonky eye, says, where is he? And, you know, Blissett says, no, what's his name? Luther.
Luther Blissett.
Blissett. Wasn't
not a footballer.
Blissett. Sorry, I'm getting confused. No, Luther says, I know Luther Blissett as well.
Did
he? Or did I used to know him? He's not
dead,
is he?
Isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is dead.
I think he's dead.
Well, I used to know him. He's one of the three degrees, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sadly.
Yeah.
So what's he doing in it? Well, he's not. Luther's in it, obviously. So Luther says, who are you talking about? You know. And the arch criminal.
Because the thing about Luther is he's got a bit of a dark side, isn't he? He's kind of halfway one foot into the kind of corrupt world of bad guys.
Well, I think he bends the rules to try and get results, but I don't think he's going to make out for himself.
Well, but he knows a lot of dodgy people.
Yeah, he does.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, he does, yeah. So when he says, who are you talking about? Mm. He just, one of the villains come, just smashes him in the face four times, you know.
Right.
Horribly, I mean, you know. And sometimes I find that difficult to believe, because if somebody punched you in the face four times, you'd lose teeth, your nose would be broken, be bleeding, but he wasn't.
It's like those ridiculous fights they have in
James Bond films.
No, but also the Bourne films.
The Bourne films,
you know, some of those fights they have go on for sort of, you know, 10 minutes.
Would have massively
choreographed.
You get an elbow in the face, you know.
Somebody smashes your head through a plate glass window, and you come back and punch
him. Yeah, that's right.
I don't think so.
But anyway, it's all for dramatic effect, isn't it? So anyway, you know, he says, what the fuck are you talking about?
So it's probably on the watershed, I presume, if there's for swearing.
Yeah, that's right.
In it?
Yeah, well, I don't think it was swearing. No. I think that were, those were my words inserted. Right. So he says, where is he? He says, I don't know who you're talking about. So and they smack him up again. Yeah. So then they get a revolver and they put one bullet in and they spin the chamber.
Oi, Russian roulette.
And they say, right, I'm going to ask you a maximum of five times.
Yeah.
Where is he?
Yeah.
So then...
Do they spin it each time?
Yeah, they spin it each time. So, they do it the first time, there's a click, you know. Anyway, what Luther's doing is... it is Luther, isn't it? Yeah. He's been undoing the bolt on the chair behind him, surreptitiously, furtively.
Okay.
And the chair collapses, which means that as his hands are tied at the back of the chair, he can wriggle out of the chair.
Yeah.
He then gets up, and then he really goes to town and picks up bits of the chair and starts smashing him in the face, you know, and all that. And then grabs the gun, and then he spins it himself and gets the big boss and say, right, you want to take a chance now?
Yeah.
And tells all the others to stay off, you know, get off.
Right.
And he says, what you... And no, it turns out the villain's son has been kidnapped by somebody. And he thinks
and
that...
And he thinks Luther's got something to do with it.
He thinks Luther's got something to do with it. Yeah. So you may be right. Maybe there is a suggestion.
Well,
he has these
strange kind of associations, shall we say, where he mixes with the people from both sides of the tracks.
Okay, so what happens then is that... Luther,
so when is this started already, Luther?
Started
last week?
Last night. Okay. Last night. From my purposes, So so then he goes home to his, you know, his tawdry one-bedroom flat in Hackney or whatever... Yeah. And start trying to make some investigations about, you know, what's going on, why this boy has disappeared. Because clearly it's a gang war thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the big boss thinks, probably along your lines, Luther Blissett's siding with the other gang or something like that. Luther. Did I say Blissett? I'll stop saying that. So anyway, what happens then is Luther then gets called...
Was Laurie Cunningham in it as well?
Laurie Cunningham's not in it, no. So what happens then is Luther then gets called out to a park by a colleague, who's clearly a close working colleague, and says, what have you got on here then, you know? And there's a dead body on the floor, you know.
Right.
And she says, oh, it's not very pleasant. Yeah, right, right. And there's a hood over this guy's head. He says, so he pulls up the hood and clearly his throat has been slit, you know. And she says... oh, that's not the worst of it. What is it then? They've cut out his tongue and gouged his eyes out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's not very nice, is it? You know, so it's all water off a duck's back to Luther, you know.
Terrible.
So so he says, yeah, okay. So then he gets a call about something and he's got a lead on something. Mm. So he then goes back to some, like, street somewhere in London. I don't know where it is, but it's not a good area. It's a bad area.
Right.
And he... goes down a set of stairs to one of those basement flats that I would never live in. I'd always be frightened of the water running through the window.
Outside the steps, are
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Mm. You know, you see the houses everywhere in London.
Yeah.
Have got ground level, then basement and lower basement and all that, you know.
Yeah.
I'd never live in... I did actually nearly take one of those once until I found massive damp and the back room of the...
I mean, if it's got a garden behind it, sometimes quite nice. The other problem with those places is they're easy to break into.
Easy to break into. That's why they've all got shutters, you know,
and
metal shutters.
Bars on the windows.
Bars on the windows and all that. But also, water always floods into them at some stage or another.
Yeah.
And this one had a damp problem in the back. It was awful, you know. And the flat actually belonged to the crime correspondent of the Daily Express, a woman.
Oh, really?
No, not crime. She worked at the Old Bailey.
Oh, yeah.
And she had, like, it was tragic. She was a great court reporter, could write, you know, shorthand at 140 words a minute, but had crippling arthritis, which led to her unable to pick up a pencil.
Right.
She had to give up her career.
So you thought that'd be good for you to just occupy her flat, did you?
Well, no, she was renting it out, like, commercially, because she lived with somebody else, you know what I mean? It's a flat she'd bought 30 years earlier as a young, you know... student or something, or young reporter.
Okay.
Anyway, the point of the story is, he looks through the window, and guess what? There's a body inside with about 100 nails nailed into his head.
Really?
And the rest of his body.
Blimey.
They didn't just nail nails into his head.
Right.
They nails into his thorax, which is your chest bone.
So this guy's covered in nails?
Covered in nails. And he's been there some time, because there's a nest of blue bottles flying around. So it's all ghastly
That's
stuff.
Horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And this is all connected to the same gangland boss.
Well, who knows? Mm. Who knows? We don't know.
Mm.
Meanwhile, the gangland boss has gone and made his own inquiries and turned up at that Lido. You know, there's a Lido in, like, Streatham or somewhere?
Streatham.
Or somewhere like that. Mm. I mean, there's a Lido.
Well, there's a big one in sort of Hampstead, Kentish Town.
Could be
there.
That one. It could be that
there's
one.
There's
anyway,
one in Finchley.
Another one in Finchley? Could be in Finchley.
There's one also in, I think there's one in Covent Garden, actually.
Is there?
But it's open air, It's not as big as the ones in Finchley.
It's not the lead. Con Gone. It's not big enough to have a lead.
It's right by the start of Shaftesbury Avenue. Is I've it? Been there.
Oh, okay. Anyway, we want to get this sorted. Yeah. So
maybe the guy with the nails in his head is the son.
No, he's not. No. No. In between time, we found the son incarcerated somewhere with a plastic mask over his face.
Oh, is he dead?
No. It's not a plastic bag to stop him breathing. Uh-huh. It's a plastic mask, the sort of thing footballers wear when they've got a cracked cheekbone. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And he's sitting on the floor and nobody quite knows why he's there. You know? Okay. But anyway, the point of the story is the crime boss, who wears a fedora, by the way, and a long coat, he looked a bit like... Texas Ranger man, you know?
Texas Ranger.
Yeah, man. Texas. Chuck Connors, is it?
Oh, what, the guy from Branded?
Didn't Chuck Connors do Texas Ranger?
Chuck Connors
Ranger?
Did Branded.
Didn't he do Texas Ranger
no,
as well?
Know. No, I can't
I think he did, you know. He made that stupid song, you know, about the Texas Rangers. He was obsessed by the Texas Rangers.
I don't
Rangers,
remember that.
So he made a programme about him. Anyway, point of the story is, the boss is on one side of the swimming pool, that's what Alido has, and this villain... comes out of a changing room on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right? Open air changing rooms?
I guess so.
Yeah.
He can have those.
And he then starts firing at him,
right.
But the guy runs away. But the villain goes boom, 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 and shatters every door as he's running away on the other side. You know what I mean?
Does he not shoot a few innocent people?
Well, there's nobody else there except these two. I don't know why. I can't work that out. But anyway, the boss lost him, so he wasn't very good at doing his job.
No.
So that's to be repeated.
Yes.
And so is Les Mis.
So the new series of Luther is ongoing. And presumably
brilliant.
Must be about six series episodes or something?
Well, no, because you see, I'm being very kind here. They started on one night and went over the next three nights.
Oh, really?
So I'm not going to tell anybody about anything after the start, right?
Right.
Because by the time they're listening to this, which won't be long, it will all be over.
They might have seen all of it.
Yeah,
well,
but I've just reviewed it to let people know you can get it on catch up.
Well, that was Porky Vision. This is On the Record.
So what happens then is he takes off the red top that he's worn for 19 years. I haven't had a bath in 19 years, by the way, this guy.
A red top?
Yeah, you know, to, like a criminal's guard.
Oh,
you know
what I mean? Yeah. Red, well, like the orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And then we notice that the jailer is, you know, his eyes are fixed on his tackle, so to speak.
On his tackle?
Yeah, on his, you know, on his sexual organs, you know. And
Why?
I don't know. He just...
What, as he's leaving?
Do you think
if he wanted something to do with it,
well,
he would have looked at him earlier during the 19 years incarceration?
So anyway, then they have this amazing conversation in which he says...
Comment allez-vous?
In which Jean Gérard says... where are my 189 francs, you see? And they're all fucking corrupt, all the jailers.
Course,
and they say, you're not getting 189 francs. We have 103 for you, 132 for you. He said, you have stolen my francs. I want them. He says, you're not fucking getting them. No, fuck
Hang
off.
On, if he had 189 francs, why'd he steal the fucking bread? I'm appealing to you because you can make money. Do you know how much local councils are paying out £1 billion a year
to
people like you?
But you see, you've hit the nail on the head there. What I really meant to say from the start, I didn't want to boast about it, is I have no ambition whatsoever to make a profit out of people who are homeless.
Is that right?
People who are homeless and down and out. I don't want to make money on the back of their misery, all right?
Is that true?
No, that's absolutely true.
Okay.
Absolutely true.
You'd rather have an empty property that you can't rent out
to
anyone.
No, I don't have empty properties. Don't worry about that. That's not a problem. But it doesn't matter, does it?
All right, okay.
So anyway, you know, he says, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
So it's probably on the watershed, I presume, if there's for swearing.
Yeah, that's right.
In it?
Yeah, well, I don't think it was swearing. Those were my words inserted. Okay.